Welcome to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
an ongoing conversation
with ministry leaders
about embracing complexity
and uncertainty
with joy
and faithfulness.
Hello, everyone. This is Beth Daniel, and I am here with my colleagues, Amy Valdez-Barca and Jennifer Maxell. And we are talking about women in ministry, the challenges we face, the gifts that we have, and the discussions that we've been enjoying in recent weeks as we have been discussing all of this. We're using a book by Elise Lonan entitled On Our Best Behavior, The Seven Deadly Sins and the Price We Pay to Be Good. And today, I'd just like to talk about what that means. How have we as women been conditioned to be good? It's an odd thing, but I think it leads to all kinds of challenges and obstacles that we need to overcome, not just in childhood, but later in life. And so the quote I'm going to use as a jump off point comes from the beginning of the book and kind of sets the groundwork for where she goes with her argument. In worrying about everything we do not want to be, in suppressing our instincts and impulses out of fear or shame, in attempting to be good, we have forgotten who we are, all special, all divine, in our own individual ways. We've gone unconscious and oddly unnatural. We are so consumed with the doing and the not doing that we have forgotten how to be. We are so fixated on authority out there, we're missing the miracles inside, all the moments that illuminate our connection to something bigger within ourselves. We are giving away our power and accepting exhaustion, resentment, despair, and disconnection instead. We deny ourselves joy, our rightful inheritance. Meanwhile, the world needs us just as we are. It's a long quote, but it comes from this idea of what it means to be a good girl. And if you think about all the literature out there, there are bad girls of the Bible and really bad girls of the Bible. They all play off this sense that women, Christian women particularly, need to be good. What on earth does that mean? And what implications are there as we try and live out our call?
The rebel in me wants to be bad all the time. That idea of having to be good all the time is something that feels like a weight and a pressure that I've felt my entire life. And I think that wanting to sort of save face, be nice, be kind, has sometimes even bit me in the, you know, where. And yeah, I truly agree that it's something that has been conditioned because our culture all around us. I mean, especially from an Asian American culture, as a young Asian American girl, some of those ideas about just be good, just be quiet, just stay in your lane, stay in your space, and don't make any ripples, and all will be well. And I tried living that, and I feel like that hasn't allowed me to truly be the person that I think God has called me to be. So yeah, that completely resonates with me. Maybe that's why this book sort of hit me so hard in that kind of way.
Yeah, I think about my own upbringing. The word that comes to mind is respectability, that I was taught literally that there are certain ways of being that I, as a young Black girl, now a Black woman, should show up as, because if I do, then society will not only accept me, but in terms of my ethnicity and my Blackness, that respectability will somehow garner me favor, which then will equal to safety. What I realize is that I was raised by a community who was very used to children and young people being held to very, very high standards that other adults were not even held to. And so in order for us to be safe, we were taught that there were certain ways of being, certain ways to look, certain ways of dressing, certain ways to talk that would kind of keep you out of trouble and keep you safe. And what we have seen is that that's not the case. But I think in my community, that's where a lot of that motivation comes from, to always be a lady and to show up and act like a lady and do ladylike things and to squelch all of the desires and instincts that do not fall within that very kind of narrow definition or expectation. And like I said, I can definitely see where it comes from, but it's so problematic as an adult woman who is called to leadership and who's just called to be a full human being in the world, that there are lots of ways that God has created me, has gifted me, that do not fit within that slim way of being.
Yeah, God's definition of what good looks like has nothing to do with how a girl or a woman acts, dresses, speaks. You know, it's just so fascinating that even as grown women in leadership positions, we still use that as the baseline, whether we realize it or not. Even Amy, when you said, I want to be bad, it's in connection with something that we're bouncing ideas off of, right? There's a standard that we're using even for our rebellion. And I think, you know, I considered myself a strong woman. I left my country, lived in Japan for a little while, moved here, pretty independent. I have two daughters. I was going to raise them independently and to be strong. And I realized that I raised them to be good and nice, and they hit middle school and they met other girls and they confused advocacy with meanness, and they confused conflict with being difficult. And I suddenly realized, oh, this is all inside of me and inside of them now, despite my best intentions. And this is something that we're all constantly battling. And what does that mean for us in ministry who should be and are able to redefine good, not based on cultural norms or expectations, but what on God declares to be good? When he created us, he said we were good, not better than men, but not worse either.
I remember when my oldest was young and she would get in trouble in preschool. Getting in trouble in preschool, that says it all, because she was being quote unquote bossy. And she was an only child and she might have been a little bit bossy. And so they complained about it so much. I was just up in arms. So when I took her to the pediatrician, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, they keep telling me that she's bossy. What do I do? What do I do? And my pediatrician said nothing. She's a leader. And she said, I never get boy parents in here complaining that their sons are called bossy because they never are. And then she said something that I thought was so telling to your point, Beth. She said, trust me, by the time she gets through middle school, the world will have whittled down all her rough edges. Oh. And for me, it was heartbreaking because here was this little child who was being who God had called her to be and following the nature of her personality, who was being judged by adults who were putting on her these negative definitions. And even as a parent of two daughters, being conscious about even the messaging that I'm giving them, when out of my own frustration or my own tiredness or whatever, something's happening and I lash out with a label, once it comes out, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I can't believe it. I can't believe it. Why did I say that? But these are messages that we are receiving that I think also confirm what we secretly feel on the inside. That I think sometimes the cultural message, it really does confirm not the still small divine voice within us, but that insecure voice that says, oh, I talk too much. I'm too tall, I'm too outgoing, I'm too whatever it is that we're feeling. And then we get this cultural message that agrees with that, and we end up shutting it down ourselves.
Truth. This idea of being too nice that gets labeled on us often as women, and it's a double-edged sword. Because if you're too nice, then you're also a pushover. And if you're a pushover, then you're not a good leader. It's just this constant battle of like, well, who am I supposed to be? And so I love the end of that quote that you're talking about, Beth. We deny ourselves joy, our rightful inheritance. Meanwhile, the world needs us just as we are. Well, how do we figure out who we are when the world just keeps piling on and smooths out the rough edges, as you said, Jen, of our very being from when we were young? So I want to lean in and discover. And I think I've got a lot of hope for us out there, because the research is starting to say, and even Elise in this book is saying, that the next couple generations of young women are getting that. They're like, yeah, I'm not going to be smoothed out. I like my rough edges. And I'm going to lean into that. And I think that's absolutely beautiful. So how do we as church leaders, because that's the part that I think where we spend too much time smoothing people out, is the church often gets caught up in that role versus saying, hey, God made you all beautiful the way you are, you know, and what does that look like? And we kind of like those rough edges. We kind of like what the world would term bad as who you are, because it's truly who God has created you to be. How do we as the church do that?
Yeah, I think one of the ways that we do it is being mindful of the type of communities that we are curating in our congregations. If our community requires that people leave their rough edges at the door in order to be a part of our community, then that's one way it happens. I've been in churches where the minute like a baby cries, it's like three ushers and some other mom is like sprinting across the sanctuary to grab this baby and whisk them out, as if somehow a baby crying is offensive. Or if people who don't have the same ability to control their body movements or noises, all of those things are very telling. When people come into our environments who don't dress the way the rest of us do, or don't have even the same theological viewpoints that we do, and we kind of teach and preach very intentionally to ground it out of them, this idea that we all have to either toe the line or there's no place for you here, I think is what really then makes people start to make decisions that, you know what, I love this community, I want to be here, so let me start contorting myself so that I fit. Instead of us saying, you know what, we are all different and we all are made in God's image, and let's figure out ways to make room and space for all of us to show up and to be appreciated for our most full and authentic self. I know in my church context, in the Black church, I think this is one of the problematic things that happens when you get a praise team. You have four people who are really, really good singers, who are on the stage, who are the ones who can give God praise. Whereas with a choir, I mean, half the people in the choir can't sing to save their lives. But thank God, the other half can. And so when you come together, you can make a joyful noise. But you don't have to have an amazing voice to be in a choir and give God praise. And so if our churches are places where only the people with good voices, quote unquote, whatever that is, only the people who are gifted in certain ways and only people who have a certain way of being are ever shown or ever affirmed, then again, I think that's one of those ways that we unconsciously communicate. You've got to be good. You've got to be quiet. You've got to be whatever that thing is that we emulate and we lift up in order to be a whole person.
Yeah, it goes back to just this cultural understanding of what good is, and it seems like a moving target. So good can be quiet and pretty and nice and don't rock the boat, but then a good leader doesn't have those kind of qualities. And so no wonder when we are women in ministry carrying all this baggage in and believing God declares us to be good, but still fighting all these other things. So I love what the author says here, because it resonated with me. I'm exhausted trying to be everything and nothing. I'm sick of thinking about my conduct. I'm tired from what I'm doing and what I'm not doing and who this, even when my head says, it's not my problem what you think of me, I'm giving it headspace, right? It is stealing my joy. I have fatigue from trying to fit a mold that is ever changing. And so how do we as women in ministry, you said about raising the next generation or passing that down, Amy, thinking about women in ministry and women in leadership, how do we redefine goodness for women? How do we define what it means to be a good woman or a good leader without using old language for females or just following males? We are unique. We're not like men. And that's a great thing. So So what do we say to women in ministry? What do we say to each other about how to be good in this call and in this world?
It's not like how to be good, but you are good.
Yes.
Period.
Yes.
You are good. Period. And because God is good, you are good, and all that God has created is good. And I think that's the bottom line. So helping people say, hey, at the core of my very being, I am good. And from there, I think, is where we have the opportunity to keep pushing against the cultural sandpaper that tries to smooth out our edges and say, that's actually quite beautiful the way it is.
You know, part of me, again, the rebel, wants to say, let's just scrap the terminology good altogether. And maybe let's look at being faithful leaders. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking of how, you know, God in creation creates and names things good. When God talks about, and it is good, there is a sense of integrity. Not that it is good in terms of its performative value or in terms of what it produces, but it is good in that it is authentically what I, God, have created it to be. And perhaps if we start looking at this idea of goodness from the standpoint of integrity, when we are showing up most fully who God has created us to be, and we are faithful to the call and the integrity of who we are, then I think we are really starting to get at what that looks like. And I think one of the ways that we can do it is by providing, say, space for women to constantly interrogate and figure out who we are. I think all of us, kind of when we come into ministry, we do all this call work, particularly if you go to seminary. There's all this work about your calling and who you're called, and you do all this intentional work. You kind of get out in the world, you start living and leading and doing. But for a lot of us, because so much of what a good woman leader is somebody who is overworked, who overworks and doesn't require Sabbath or time or stillness or time to think, that we don't then continue doing that work as the place of feeding ourselves. And so I think that's one place where we as women, allowing space for each other and holding space for each other to be able to have those conversations and do that work, I think that would be really helpful.
Absolutely. And I'm just thinking as we wrap up, just honestly having the conversation about pressures and the way that we have been shaped that we don't even know anymore is really important. Because as we've seen, this foundation of understanding that there's an expectation of women's behavior, of the way they look, of the way they interact with people from a very young age, actually affects all kinds of things. It affects confidence, it affects ambition, it affects your ability to lead, your ability to speak up, your ability to claim authority in all areas of life, but even in the church. And so even just having this conversation, and hopefully men and women who are listening to it become more aware that this is real. This isn't whiny. You know, when a group of women get together and discuss this, it can seem whiny. And again, that's that apology piece, Jennifer. It's like, I don't want to feel apologetic about bringing this into the light and redefining that word and that expectation and putting on the image of Christ and claiming the image of Christ in my call and in my ministry and in my womanhood.
Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
a project of the Macedonian Ministry Foundation.
The Ministry Collaborative nurtures a national network
of pastors and congregations
committed to faithful,
creative,
and courageous engagement in their communities.
Our producer is Marthane Sanders.
To find out more about our work of cultivating leadership that makes a difference
in congregations and communities,
visit our website
at www.ministrycollaborative.org.